Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome to Over Night America. Wow, what a big win from the Cardinals tonight. It makes up for the poor performance against the Brewers there before. Hey, not bad at all. 13-5, the final. Very exciting there. And while I was waiting to go on air, right before we started here at 11 o'clock, watching the overtime game between Nashville and Dallas, so there is going to be a spoiler here. Dallas wins in overtime. Man, they put up a lot of shots for a 2-1 game. And what a goaltending matchup between the two. So the Blues will take on the Stars. Don't know exactly when round two will start yet. But if it happens on Thursday, to me, that would be awesome. Since both teams would have, you know, two nights off and then play on the third, at least for Dallas having two nights off. I don't know if it'd be a Friday start, if they try to force it for the weekend. I have no idea. So I've been trying to search and figure that out. We know that game seven for Carolina and Washington will be on Wednesday night. So we know for sure the first round will be over by then. You know what I like about the NHL? I like that they don't rush the playoff rounds. Doesn't the NBA do that? They'll start round two before round one is over. I think that is just crazy talk, if you ask me. But lots of sports going on here. And today was Earth Day. A lot of colleagues here at KMOX spending time outside in the parks. I saw a lot of people tweeting about it. If you haven't seen it for yourself, you can go to KMOX.com. I know a few of our personalities were out there. I saw that Mark Reardon was out cleaning up trash. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw Mark Reardon pop up on there. I thought, wow, good for him. Roger Brand was out there. We had, who else did we have from KMOX? Carol Daniel was out there. I'm sure we had some more, but I was just looking at some of the social media. I did not make it out to clean. One of the weird things about working at night, it's not practical for me to get off at 2 a.m., go home, sleep for a couple hours, and then come back to work at, they started at 9 a.m., to volunteer my time while everyone else is doing it on the clock, and then have to come back and then do an entire show at night. It just, unfortunately, it doesn't work out. So I didn't get to go out and clean with the rest of the crew. Normally I would if I was able to, you know, do it while I was here and make it work, but not always like that. You know what is happening here? See, I just kind of give you an update of everything that's changed between yesterday and today. We have the entire building getting cleaned. We have all kinds of cleaning staff here, and they're doing everything. They're waxing the floors. They're shampooing the carpets. They're on their hands and knees, and they're cleaning the baseboards of our building because everything needs to look good tomorrow because corporate's in town. And because of that, we have big meetings and, you know, they're going to talk to the staff and give us updates on this and that. And it should be a, you know, fine meeting. There's nothing weird about it. You know what happened to me? This is what I'm one of those guys that thinks to himself, come on, why now does this happen? Not that I'm worried that anything's going to happen when they do this inspection, but, you know, I always worry in the back of my head, there's going to be things that reflect negatively on me for things I didn't do. So this is what happens. Can I just bellyache for a moment? So we get an email from the business manager, and she says, make sure all of the chairs and the trash cans are off the ground so when they come through and clean the carpets that they can get as much area as they can. So we want to make sure they have as much time to clean and, you know, they're not wasting a bunch of time moving things that we can get our staff members to clean out. Good idea. So I come in, and they already cleaned the carpet in the area I prepare for the show, which is awesome. So it's already out of the way. So I take the trash can that is underneath my desk, and then I move it back under my desk, okay? In the process of doing that, someone during the day put a half-filled can of pop in the trash can, and it was leaking all the way down. So I got all of these little pop stains all around my desk right now because someone threw away a can of pop that they didn't drain first. So I'm like, great. You know, they tell us, hey, everything needs to be great. They're going to come in and clean the carpets. Everything looks great except around my desk because someone couldn't go dump their pop out before throwing it in my trash can. Wasn't that nice? Real nice. So I think, great. Now that I got all of this little stains and stuff, and I'm the only one in the building that has stains around their carpeting now, I'm going to look like this slob, and I had nothing to do with it. I think like that. Maybe I shouldn't be so paranoid to think about things like that. Later this hour, I want to talk to the millennial whisperer. His name is Chris Tuff, on motivating the world's largest generation, which makes me wonder, I think the world's largest generation, and me being a millennial included, gets very fooled by politicians that come around and say, we're going to forgive student loans. Yay! Elizabeth Warren releases sweeping student debt cancellation and free college plan. So here she is making her announcement.
It's not just paying the tuition. It's how they pay for books. It's how they pay for the expenses of having a baby taken care of if they already have a child at home, or being able to cover commuting expenses. Or maybe it's a chance to live in a dorm and have the kind of college experience that other kids get.
Okay, so now we got to pay for it all. Elizabeth Warren on Monday proposed eliminating the student loan debts of tens of millions of Americans and making all public colleges tuition-free. Warren's new plan would forgive about $50,000 in student loans for Americans and households earning less than $100,000 a year. And according to analysis provided by our campaign, that would provide immediate relief to more than 95% of the 45 million Americans with student debt. Isn't this crazy to me? You go into this willingly. You're not forced to go to college, but you go into this willingly. You take out a loan willingly. You sign out a loan willingly. And then you have these politicians that put this pie in the sky stuff that'll never happen and shouldn't happen into their minds. Great. Just vote me in. And I feel like this is what the Democrats are doing right now. They're pulling open the Barack Obama playbook, which is be Santa Claus. Remember the great Rush Limbaugh bit that he did right after the 2012 election when Barack Obama beat Mitt Romney to start his second term? And what was Rush Limbaugh's big point? You can't beat Santa Claus. And man, you remember this one?
So let's just go all in here, folks. Sit back and enjoy.
Barack Claus is coming to town. Barack Claus is coming to town.
So this is what the Democrats are doing. I think they're opening up the President Obama playbook. How did he get in power? Well, promise everything you can for free.
Claus is coming to town.
You know, you have a whole slate of Democrats and a lot of them on CNN tonight because apparently CNN all town halls all the time format. And they're all calling dibs on certain.
I'm taxing you twice.
This is so funny.
Gonna reverse who's naughty and nice. Hey, Barack Claus is coming to town.
Oh, I love that. That was one of his best bits. So I think they're all trying to call dibs on. Oh, I called dibs on impeachment. Oh, I called dibs on free college. I called dibs on climate change. No, I called it first. No, I get it. No, I called dibs on. They're all trying to divvy up what they think is going to be the big social issue that they're going to be able to grab for this demographic, the millennial demographic, because that's how they're going to win. What a crock. I mean, I hope they see through this. But should we cancel college debt? Is that just what we should do? You know how much money they say it's going to cost? Hold on. You want to know? This might make you a little bit sick, but here's the number, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. The campaign estimates, so this is the Elizabeth Warren campaign. If you can trust her own estimations, and you know this is going to be a low number, the only time they're conservative in estimations is when they try to put out something that's absurdly large. It would cost $1.25 trillion over 10 years. Over $1 trillion. A trillion and a quarter. $1.25 trillion. Now, keep in mind that 25 is $250 billion. It's not a little. It's a lot. You're telling me we're going to be able to forgive that much debt and just be perfectly fine. You can't think of maybe perhaps better places to spend that money? Seriously. So should we just cancel college debt? Maybe we'll take some of your calls next. At 314-436-7900 on Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America. Elizabeth Warren comes out swinging. I do believe all of the Democrat candidates got together and said, we're going to call dibs on the entitlement we want to give out or promise during our campaign. And, you know, we're going to live and die by that thing. So when you're desperate and you're not leading in the polls and you're not confident you'll be able to separate yourself, what do? Well, you open up the playbook and say, what could work here? What can I give away for free in order to try to entice people to vote for me, even if they have really no intention or no logical way to execute on the things that they're promising? I mean, it's a pretty blatantly open lie that they're going to be able to promise over 10 years $1.25 trillion of debt forgiveness and get all of that approved, let alone practically find ways to pay for it. So let's take your calls on this, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Should we cancel college debt? Ryan calling in. Hey, Ryan, what's going on?
Yeah, this is Ron.
Oh, Ron, sorry. Hey, Ron, what's going on?
That's okay. Well, those millennials are in for a big surprise because canceled debt, IRS considers current income. Mm-hmm. So if you cancel $100,000 in debt, they will have to pay tax as though they received $100,000 in cash.
Wow.
That's probably $20,000 to $25,000. If they're not working, they don't have it.
Well, that's crazy. Wait, so the debt to the IRS. Well, can you, you can't really default on debt to the IRS, just like you can't for like student loans. Like you can't default on student loans.
Yeah, but that's what my nephew just went through. He was at Vaderad College and had a loan to go there. It was forgiven because they closed, but he's got to pay the tax on all that was forgiven this year.
Interesting, like a gift. Well, that's fascinating to me, mostly because it's not like the government can write it off because they're not going to write it off against themselves. So private organizations that write debt off, you see these, it used to happen a lot with hospitals before Obamacare came around and then they made it so you can't write off that sort of thing. But like, let's say, the colleges were able to write off and they were able to get some kind of help or bonus for lowering the debt that was owed to them. But what's going to happen to the government? It doesn't matter.
But if you have a debt and it is forgiven, IRS considers that income.
Great. Hey, thanks, Ryan. Good call. Or Ron. Okay. I got it wrong again.
That's
thanks.
Okay.
Bye. We got a hiccup there. Sorry. Charlie calling in. Hey, Charlie, what's going on?
Hey, what's going to happen to the guys like me that work so hard and scraped and paid for my kids' colleges? Are we going to get back any money?
Doesn't look like it. Same with me, Charlie. I graduated college in 2005, so I'm a late end millennial. 2005, and I was responsible with my money, and I was able to pay off my college loans several years ago because I worked hard at it and I made that a priority because I didn't want to have all this debt hanging over me for the rest of my life. And you know what? I sacrificed all these things. I sacrificed a lot in my life. You know what this doesn't take into account for people that still have student loans? It doesn't take into account if maybe they handled their money or they were financially responsible with their money. It doesn't matter where their money went. It doesn't matter if they had the ability to repay. All it shows is that they have money to pay to the government and they want to somehow forgive that sort of thing. That is no way to go around forgiving loans that people went willingly into that you can't default on.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And part of the problem, too, is that this type of ploy has been tried over and over again, and I think they're going to keep trying it until it finally works for someone. And Elizabeth Warren, she's almost nowhere in the polls. She feels like maybe this is the way to bring her up, I guess. I don't know. I don't even see this. Do you see this as a winning issue for most people?
No, it's not a winning issue. Democrats... And I've been a Democrat all my life, but not since Trump went in there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what, Democrats are they're kicking back. They don't know what to do now.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Charlie.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
You know, one of the things we noticed during the last presidential election was there's a big field of Republicans that wanted to challenge their run to the White House. And Donald Trump, when he came in, was written off by everyone. He was like number 15 of 20 or whatever of the ones that declared. No one thought he was going to go anywhere based on the polls, and he slowly rose to the top. I don't see that type of personality on the left. I mean, Bernie Sanders might be the closest you have, but we've already been shown that the Democrats are going to do everything they can to keep a Bernie Sanders out because he's not complimentary to the way the Democrats operate. So
outside of that, do you see any personality making their way? This is just a coordinated attempt. I don't think the Democrats are actually trying to win. I think they're just trying to spread out and mitigate the odds of trying to get someone that could resonate with. And they don't have that outsider. They don't have someone that's a nice personality that they could challenge Donald Trump right now. So you know what? They're like, okay, we're going to use this guy. We'll put debt-free college on her, and we'll put impeachment on him, and we'll put reparations on him, and we'll climate change on her, and we'll they're just trying to play the field. This is not a winning thing. What are you going to do? And how do you defend yourself when you stand up and say, $1.25 trillion, we're going to obligate ourselves for $1.25 trillion over 10 years in order to accomplish this, in order to make it so what we're going to do is we're going to eliminate debt from people that willingly and openly went into it. Now, it's not to say you can't find ways to stimulate, like, okay, let me put it this way. What if there was a candidate that was actually, well, I don't know, like a Barack Obama in the sense of a Cars for Clunkers thing or Clunkers for Cars or whatever that program was called. That was a pretty big failure, sure. But think of it this way. What if they said, okay, everyone's eligible, not just the people that have student loans, but if you at one point had a student loan, then you'd be eligible. And we're going to use this as a way to try to stimulate the economy. We're not going to give you $50,000, but you know, yeah, you paid off, you're responsible, sure, or you need a little extra help or you're behind on your payments. Maybe use that as a way. There is no such thing as a reasonable Democrat right now in the fold of the people that are running for office. It's not the reasonable, like, okay, we might be able to help some of this. It's the, let's pay off $50,000 and give it to 94% of the people that owe money to the government. That's crazy talk. Teresa calling in. Hey, Teresa.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, listen, I want to ask an honest question, and please don't hang up on me.
Wait, hold on. I got to ask you a question first, though. Did someone else call into our call screener, and then you took the phone from them? All right, way to go, Teresa. You know, part of this is when some people are not intelligent enough to actually put an argument on the table that they have to try to belittle people that are transgender or something like that. Okay, way to go, buddy. You just accomplished that. So, what can you do? You know, the funny thing is we got a thing called a dump button in here, so no one gets to hear you anyway, and you just sound stupid. Congratulations to you, buddy. Way to go, pal. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. If you're like our buddy over there, go ahead. You can call in, too, if you want to make a point. That's fine. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Ryan Recker. Overnight America. The two best things in your night on KMOX.
And joining us now is the author of the new book, The Millennial Whisperer. It's author Chris Tuff. Thanks for coming on to KMOX.
Yeah, great to be here.
The Practical Profit-Focused Playbook for Working With and Motivating the World's Largest Generation. You know, these millennial stories are a dime a dozen. It seems like every other website wants to pop up the latest thing that, you know, millennials are outraged about or things you should be upset about because millennials are doing or whatever. Kind of drives me a little crazy, too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's driven me crazy for years. I mean, I've been working with them. I mean, I'm right on the cusp. You know, I'm 38. So, you know, according to statistics, they're 37-year-olds to 23-year-olds, which is ridiculous, right? I mean, it's such a massive group of people. And, you know, one of the things I set out to do initially in The Millennial Whisperer, my book, is I think it's really two very different generations within that, older millennials and younger millennials. And what makes them so different is two things. One, when in their lives they started kind of using mobile phones and social media. Mm-hmm. So the older millennials, they had beepers in college. You know, they didn't really get social media until after their college or later in their college careers. And then the younger millennials were given an iPhone with a Snapchat account on it. And then the other big variable is when the recession hit them, the older millennials, or their parents, the younger millennials. And it's really those two things that make them two very different. I call them Oregon Trail millennials and Snapchat millennials. Oregon Trail because they played Oregon Trail, and then Snapchat because they had Snapchat account.
That's the way to look at it. What was the age range again for a millennials today?
23 to 37.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm on the high end of it. I'm 35. So when I went to school, I went to college. My first year was 2001. I didn't have a cell phone. No one I knew had a cell phone. It was like unheard of to have a cell phone. Even in 2001, I might have known one or two people. And I remember growing up in Oregon Trail, you better believe, when we went to the computer lab in grade school, everyone grabbed that or Carmen Sandiego. It was the only two fun games, you know, that they had in the educational bin.
Totally. I was there with you. I was, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? I love it.
And we always had those old Mac computers that were way outdated, but we didn't know any better. And
Apple IIc.
And I remember they used to bring in people to talk to us about what is the internet. Bring your family. You'll learn what the internet is. You know, and then they would do these like group talks. And we kept thinking, oh, wow, who can afford to have the internet in their home? And what do they do with it even? And I remember I thought it was the coolest kid ever the day we got internet at our house.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I talk about my daughter, you know, you talk about technology and with kind of, you know, how it makes a generation very different. I talk about how my 7-year-old, when two, I walked up to our flat screen TV and I was like, honey, why are there fingerprints all along the bottom? And it was because she was trying to swipe the TV on.
Yeah.
You know, like an iPhone.
I totally understand that. You're right about it's weird if you're at one of the low end or high end millennials. Totally understand that because I feel like I don't really identify with the 23-year-olds, and I don't think I ever could identify with it. It seems like they grew up in a completely different world. So I got to imagine that also shapes the workplace when you see that range. And even though we're only separated by, you know, 10 or 15 years, that's a big gap.
Well, you know, and one of my favorite quotes that has come out of the book is one of my friends, Evan, turned to me after reading the book. He goes, you know, what I've discovered is millennials aren't the problem. They just expose all the problems. And, you know, I think that's essentially, I've tried to create a book where people can read it and they can start instituting big changes in the way that they manage this workforce. And, you know, a lot of it is just kind of common sense, which is, you know, that line between kind of friendships and work, as well as kind of where work and play, you know, cell phones kind of got in the middle of all of that. So, you know, I think one of the things is as Americans that we all can attest to is that there's a massive need for empathy and connection. And, you know, I use, you know, some of the stuff I bring up in the book is in your one-on-ones with your people, give them the option if they want to talk about work or if they want to talk about being just what's going on in their lives. And I use an executive, one of my friends, Mike Hibison from Home Depot. He gives everyone that option. 80% of the time, they decide to talk about life. Hmm. And it's through that, you know, the profit will follow. The work ethic will follow as soon as there's connection. You know, when people, especially this generation, when they don't feel that connection, they're just going to quit. You know, the other side of it is what we all do. You know, I say all the time that we got to stop comparing our insides to other people's outsides. And I also call it like the Pinterestation of this generation. There's no better example of it than the first day of school. All of our news feeds are people posting those perfect pictures of their kids. And, you know, these are millennial parents. And it's got that kind of chalkboard with Ashley's third grade and their teacher and everyone's smiling. It's exhausting.
Hmm.
And so, you know, one of my rules that I put in there is I call it my 70-30 rule, and I instill it into everyone on my team, all 30 millennials. And it's that 30% of life is hard. 30% of what we do isn't going to be right in line with our kind of passion and purpose. 70% of your job should fuel you up and fire you up. But you've got to understand that grass is always greener complex is in all of us, you know, and we've got to stop kind of quitting our jobs, trying to seek it out.
Wow, that's interesting. So the book is called The Millennial Whisperer, The Practical Profit-Focused Playbook for Working with and Motivating the World's Largest Generation. And author Chris Tuff joins us here on KMOX. One of the things that I notice, because I do a show on the weekends that focuses on family business, and we talk to a lot of different family business owners, and we talk to the next generation. We talk about the transitions that put them in the ownership roles and the leadership roles in their own business. And one of the things I realized was that a lot of times the next generation that comes in, they always have a lot of different ideas on how they want to handle it different than the way their parents handled it. They want to come in and they want to do it this way and do it that way. But the people we talk to and the ones that help facilitate that generational transition say to the next generation, you know, it's worked for your parents and their parents and their parents for all of these years. You have to at least try it their way before you try to completely flip the business upside down and try it your way, because you got to get your feet on the ground. You got to you got to be in their shoes. You got to understand why they're doing the things they're doing. And I see that sometimes with, you know, the generation and maybe the younger millennials that are coming in, they want to get in there and they want to always do it their way, but they don't really have the respect or the understanding of how it was done before. So they try to skip that step before they actually know how to do it. So is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think if you look at what millennials are looking for out of anything, you know, out of leaders, and this is what the book really focuses on, they're looking for inspirational leadership. They're looking for autonomy. They're looking for transparency, and they're looking for real purpose in what they're doing. And I think, you know, that transparency and autonomy thing is really important, where people misinterpret what that looks like. And I think your point is a really good one. And what they're really looking for in that transparency and autonomy is, you know, specifically in the transparency, is give me the facts. Give me as much of this stuff as I can. Don't hide some of the things from me so I can actually learn where it is that I need to be affecting change. And, you know, the other piece is that, you know, I think that, I mean, it took me 64 job interviews after graduating from Vanderbilt to actually find a job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, especially with family-owned businesses, children aren't necessarily falling into a place where their passions lie. So, you know, one thing I really, try to encourage is more lateral moves and more cross pollination, so people can, especially during those young ages, not be distracted with, you know, fortune and the big title, and instead look within themselves. Where do your passions and purpose lie? And then work backwards to find the right gig for that. For a family-owned business, it might not necessarily be running it. It might be, you know, doing something else. But you're absolutely right. You know, one thing I also encourage is everyone should have a side hustle on my team. And so what happens is people will – I have one example of a woman on my team, and she pursued her side hustle. I helped her create the cap table, raise a little bit of money, and it was a clothing company, and it completely failed. And she was like, Chris, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be. I'm glad I didn't quit my job to go pursue this. I'm like, exactly. And that's what happens. Every single person that's pursued some of these side hustles, they figure out quickly, man, this is really hard. And I think you bring up a great point there.
He is the Millennial Whisperer, and that's the name of the book, The Practical Profit Focused Playbook for Working with and Motivating the World's Largest Generation. I'm on the tail end of a millennial, and it feels a little bit weird every time I'm talking about a 23-year-old millennial. I just don't know how to understand that. We feel like we're in two different worlds, and we kind of are. So we're going to continue our conversation next with Chris Tough about millennials on Overnight America KMOX.
Making the darkness of night a little brighter. It's Ryan Recker and Overnight America on KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, joined with our guest, the author of The Millennial Whisperer, the practical profit-focused playbook for working with and motivating the world's largest generation, Chris Tough. Thank you again for coming on. It's funny, you talk about the things pursue, what fills you up, and there's that one of the recent things, and they do this all the time. They bring out the worst 10 jobs or the worst 50 jobs in America. And for me, it always hurts and stings when you see two of the top 10 happen to be in my field, either DJ or broadcaster or newspaper writer or TV anchor things. There's always like a couple of them in the top 10 worst jobs in the country. So I feel like everyone, they have to be passionate to get into an industry like this. It's not a safe industry. And there is a little bit of risk that goes into doing the things you really love. But you got to, I guess, figure out what you love. And there's always adaptations of the things you love that could fulfill you, too. You may think in your head that you're going to be the next superstar quarterback in the NFL. But when that doesn't happen, when you don't get, you know, drafted after college or whatever it is, there's other things you can do that are very fulfilling that are related to the passions that you love. And, you know, when it comes to coaching or it comes to health or it comes to anything, I mean, the sports industry is very large. So I feel like as long as you go into it open, knowing that you're finding something you like, you're going to find something you like.
Well, I think, you know, people need to realize that in this world of instant everything, right? Instant gratification, mm-hmm. instant, you know, it takes a lot of hard work. And it takes leaders to instill that in their people, that it doesn't matter what you're doing, whether it be fitness, whether it be health, whether it be running that marathon or finding that job, it takes a lot of hard work. And I think sometimes in our businesses, we emphasize on the big audacious goals versus all of those incremental pieces to help fuel that hard work that happens over time.
You know, how do I, as a millennial, and I look at this as, you know, I say me, but I feel like I really have a hard time identifying with it most times. When I look at some of the different trends of the younger millennials, and since I'm in news talk, I see the, you know, the culture of they're always offended and they're always this and they're, you know, they can't come on a college campus and speak. And, you know, you see all of these different trends that are contradictory to the things I believe, even though I'm lumped in with a millennial. And a lot of times I'll look back and I'll say, man, I sure do hate this generation. How do I not feel that way? Like, how do I feel optimistic and take those things that I see as disappointing, but actually look at it in a different light so I'm not always disappointed?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the title, I mean, The Millennial Whisperer is the title of my book, but the front cover is all of those negatives that you bring up, right? Entitled is in big, bold, you know, needy, young, dumb, disrespectful. I think that's what I'm trying to change the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I've done a lot of interviews at this point, and oftentimes people will call out someone, some millennial leader or some millennial politician that's done something, and it's my response is always, well, we've got to stop using millennial as a synonym for inexperienced and young.
Interesting.
And the same thing, and I think we oftentimes do that, and I mean, the hope that I can kind of instill is I think as you look at, especially going into Gen Z, we're actually seeing some of the most impactful, hardest working generation to come along in years. It's up to us as corporations and organizations to start adapting our ways to accommodate it. And there's no better example of that than what technology has done. And I mean, look at our own expectations for our workers. I know I do it. Like, when I send out an email, I expect, doesn't matter when it is, I expect a response within 4 hours or so. And if I don't get it, I'm like, what's taking them so long, you know? So I think what we're undergoing right now is this massive transition into the way that the world has changed around us. And, you know, I think another thing that doesn't help things is social media, because we have all of this stuff at our fingertips, and it's kind of up to our algorithms to see what we see and what we don't see, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's been my background. I fell into the social media space in 2005 and that's what I've done at my firm, 22 Squared. I've created an offering around that. And, you know, we work with Fortune 50 companies, but, you know, there's another side to all of this that I think we need to start adapting around.
Interesting. Author Chris Tuff and his best-selling book, The Millennial Whisperer. One other question for you. When you talk about accommodation, I look at some things as almost fake accommodation, where they say we have to cater to millennials, so they do things that they think cater to the millennials. And sometimes I cringe when I see certain things. And I know there's some workplaces that are like really hip. You know, you're over on the West Coast. I've never been to like Google or Facebook's headquarters. But, you know, you see photos and everything's colorful and they got slides and they're doing yoga and getting massages over here and things like that. So then a place like here in St. Louis will say, oh, we got to cater to the millennials. So, you know, they try to sprinkle in things, but it never really resonates with the people that are working there. It's like a completely different culture. So is there fake accommodation, and can you overdo it trying to cater to things that you think are good?
100%. And, you know, I think in those cases, I use an example in the book of a woman that pulled me aside, and she was like, Chris, I mean, you have 370 employees, 90% millennials. They seem to be thriving. What's the secret? And I was like, okay, well, I'm writing a book on it, so I'm going to include you in it. I'm going to call you another name. But she said they had hired a barista and they had a cereal bar. And she was like, I've got a barista on
I'm paying her a salary. People can get whatever coffee they want.
And I have a salary.
I have a cereal bar with over 30 cereals so people can get cereal anytime they want. Because I hear these millennials love cereal. And I said, there's a much larger problem here, and you're just trying to get a quick fix with this with the barista. You know, a lot of times the issues lie within the leadership and where they're not actually, you know, doing those things that I think this generation craves the most, which is, inspirational leadership. A lot of leaders think they're inspirational, and they're not necessarily inspirational,
which
is also why I created a survey, a 360 survey that you can download on my website, themillennialwhisperer.com, and you can actually see whether or not from your people you're inspirational. But I think we're often, I say on the back, bring the beer kegs home, forget about the ping pong tables, put the participation trophies in the trash where they belong.
Yeah.
Because I think we're just trying to get a quick fix to accommodate for this generation, and we're not getting to the heart of the problem. And the book is all about those things.
Totally agree. I worked in a place where they brought in the kegs or whatever, and I had a huge problem with it, mostly because of, you know, liabilities. We're always driving station vehicles and things like that. I'm thinking, no, I don't want that around my employees. I don't want my, because I was managing, and I don't want my employees drinking on the job. I mean, we're broadcasters here. And they didn't care. They said, oh, it's just what they're doing now. It's how we have to, you know, make sure we get their attention. And it just drove me crazy. And the funny thing about the barista, this is how I feel. And maybe this puts me in clumping towards the upper end millennial. If I'm working in a place and someone I really liked and everyone else really liked gets fired, the first thing I think of is they got a full-time barista, but they can't afford to keep this person around. It would drive me crazy. And creates more mental blocks for people there. It's like if you want them to succeed, you just created a block for them because now there's some resentment that you're making bad decisions by having a barista on staff.
Totally.
Yeah.
And, you know, like doing a bunch of interviews up in New York, and one was on Cheddar, and they asked me, so what are some of the tactics that some of these leaders can put into place today that you can mention? And one is that I talk about kind of this need for reward and recognition, which comes from the fact that a lot of this generation is used to that reward and recognition through their parents, you know, and the helicopter parenting, as well as through social media. So what I do in all of my team statuses is I start them out with snaps, and I go and I open it up. I say, I want to give snaps, and I'll call out someone on the team, to Meg for killing it on that interview and for going above and beyond with the presentation, blah, blah, blah. And then everyone gives snaps. And that goes on for 30 minutes. But that's a lot better than doing, hey, can everyone tell us what you're working on? Instead, you kind of code it with this, you know, let's build people up, and let's also kind of let's go around and do snaps. And Cheddar is now, anytime I do an interview with Cheddar, we end it with snaps. So it's a fun little thing. But, you know, people listening, like, those are some of the tactics that I think you will go far, you know, much further than a barista and much cheaper than the cereal bars.
Yeah. So The Millennial Whisperer, it's out now. If people want to check out the book, where to find it, and where can they find you?
I'm at Chris Tuff on Twitter, and at themillennialwhisperer.com. You can download the first chapter, see if you actually like it. And then, by the way, millennial is two L's and two N's. I learned that the hard way because I wrote the book and said it so many times. So themillennialwhisperer.com. And then Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of your local bookstores should have them. And, you know, it's getting excited. We've sold.
Super exciting. Hey, thank you, and Overnight America.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.